Welcome to this Think podcast as part of our community transport series, in which we visit Pembrokeshire, a fairly rural county in South West Wales. I'm Lucy Baker, a researcher in mobility and transport health, and my colleague Amy Nicholas, also producing a series, is a project officer for the Transport and Health Integrated Research Network. The Think project is funded by Health and Care Research Wales and is a collaboration between Public Health Wales and Aberystwyth University. In this episode, we're exploring co-production in its role in delivering sustainable transport services that are accessible for everybody. We're looking at the role of community transport providers in developing and establishing, maintaining co-production and developing collaborative models. They work very closely with communities and they respond to needs in the community, delivering options that aren't really economically viable for commercial operators. We're going to speak to Rod Bowen from community transport organisation Dol and Tyvee. Dol and Tyvee operate across Mid Wales and they started out from Llandysul, which is where we'll be visiting to speak to Rod, but also to meet people who use community transport there and what this hub has brought to them. We're going to start off from a point raised by Gemma Lelliott. Gemma is the director of the Community Transport Association Wales. She mentions the CJCs as a point of collaboration. These are the corporate joint committees the Welsh Government established fairly recently as a way of delivering regional transport planning.
As the CJCs come into force and we have this kind of regional overarching view of developing this transport network for Wales, is that actually this is an opportunity to deliver that in practice. We can support them to work collaboratively to co-produce and co-design these networks with the communities that are going to be using them, because we know where that's been done, you see a significant increase in the number of people who are using the public transport systems.
And you can listen to this conversation in full on another episode in the podcast series. But here what Gemma's saying essentially is that one of the reasons why community transport has been so successful in improving people's access to key services and improving their social networks is its co-productive approach that involves the community in everything that it does. And we want to see what we can learn from community transport in terms of moving this co-productive approach elsewhere in mainstream transport planning, transport networks. So we're going to move now to Rod. Rod Bowen is the development officer in Dol and Tyvee. Rod's going to add his thoughts on co-productive approaches and what can be gained from them. And he's going to introduce as a case study the model of the community transport hub.
Is there anything you think mainstream public services for transport could learn from your model, or how could this be rolled out more widely?
It's a difficult one. The demand is there. There's no doubt that demand for transport is definitely in our society today. We've got an ageing population, more specialist needs in getting around and so on. Maybe wheelchair, they may need more help to get in and out from the vehicles or even to get back into their own homes and so on. But the distance that services are provided are increasing as well. So as for learning, I think when it comes to co-production, I think is probably the area that we really need to be investigating as a society. You know, we all understand there's less money coming in from central government because of the various reasons, you know, that faces these days. But the reality of it is the volunteer sector, if it's set up properly, we can actually contribute to the visions maybe of a local authority or maybe the local health board or whoever that may be, but by bringing money that may not also readily be available for government or whatever. So what we specialise in is actually trying to listen to what's needed out there, but provide a service on the back of that.
What would you like to see differently happening then?
I'd really like to see the communication channels coming down to delivery rather than talking about it. Many years ago, as part of an organisation where we had lots of talk about policies and documents and so on that needed to be done, we spent lots of money on that. But in reality, little of that money filtered down to the people that needed the service. The end user is the person that you want to actually help the most. Talking about it, making policies doesn't always get to that particular point. But I realise that that is part of the process.
Who are the key actors in this key production model, would you say?
Certainly the local health boards, certainly Welsh Government. It's about basically looking at the different the different statutory bodies that would gain the most, from this co-production model.
And what kind of changes do you think we need in the health side of things to make this work a little bit better?
Difficult. Without upsetting anybody, that is. I think that the changes that need, really, is that health boards need to see what's out there, first of all, understand what's out there. They're commissioners of services normally, when they actually look at transport, because they commission the transport services from either taxi operators, commercial operators, Welsh Ambulance Service, or wherever that may be. The community transport element has not been looked upon as an area of development, as far as I'm aware of, or certainly we don't get that impression as operators, in a sense. Now, as an operator, we are, particularly bushy-tailed in the way that we actually develop our services. And the reason for that is because we understand that our customers need to be mobilised and they've got little or no other options. Whereas I think sometimes the commissioners of services, they're very good at commissioning stuff, but they don't really put that money in the right places, if that makes sense. And I think, and I quite seriously mean this, that if community transport was looked upon as a partner that needed its capacity built to deliver services in a certain type of way that satisfied the health board, I think both parties and the general public would gain immensely from it. And what I really mean from that is the fact that a recognition that there's money needed to build the capacity of the community transport sector. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's a two-way partnership where the community transport sector then is able to actually provide services at the level and in the scope that is required from the health board.
And in terms of how community transport is delivered on the ground with the community in mind, Dolland Ivy and perhaps other community transport providers work in the same way, have a concept or a model called the Community Transport Hub. Rod's going to explain where this concept came from and how it works.
When Westways Action for Mental Health came to talk to Dolland Ivy about expanding services to Carmarthenshire, we had to decide, were we going to operate it from Llandyssil or were we going to operate it in hubs in different areas? And that's where the hub concept came from, basically, because it just happened. It just seemed to be quite a natural thing to do because people in Llanelli and Carmarthen and so on weren't going to come to Llandyssil to pick up a bus. And we were using, the whole project was about buses at the time in the mental health sector in Carmarthenshire. And because of that because of the way we developed that hub concept at that time, we've carried on doing that because basically what we found with the hubs was the fact that the areas where the vehicles were placed and kept, and the groups that used them then started to consider those vehicles as their own. So it became the Carmarthen bus, it became the Llanelli bus, and there was some community ownership in it then, and so on. So we developed it with the mental health sector, but we also, to make it sustainable, developed it with piles of non-for-profit community groups. So the mental health sector groups were using it about 38% of the time. The rest of the usage was coming from the community. So, for instance, it could be mixed use. It could be a school using it first thing in the morning to take kids swimming. It could be a community group taking it out for lunch in the afternoon. And it could be the local darts team taking it out in the evening.
So when you say hub, that means something like the vehicle is stationed there.
Correct.
So one of the things a hub needs is a place to keep a vehicle overnight securely. So will it be a community organisation with an interest, with a mobility need, and they can securely keep one of these vehicles and let people come and access it?
It is and it isn't, right? The hub concept was developed in the sense around the fact that there were multiple groups within that area that had been identified or users in that area that had a transport issue. And when we go and work with those communities, they're the easiest communities to work with because basically they've got an interest in having transport solution, and they will also help us work out where it's best to actually place the vehicle. Key handling is a big problem, you know, if you're not careful. From my past experience in community transport many years ago, key handling was one of the things that was the greatest barrier for a lot of groups and organisations. So we either have key boxes at these locations. These locations could be anything from a community centre down to the Welsh Ambulance Service, control in Carmarthen. It could be anywhere really, where we can actually safely put a vehicle and it's accessible to as many people at a wider range of time as possible. So it's important, you know, for a football club, for instance, maybe to pick up the vehicle at 9 o'clock in the morning. So the keys have got to be available. The key handling in Llanelli would be a partnership between a local garage that's open at 6 o'clock in the morning till about 10 at night. And the vehicle is parked next door in the Brennan Trathlon Country Club.
Right.
So,
but you can't have casual users. Everyone has to be signed up.
Yep.
Yeah,
we operate under a Section 19 permit, and that means that we're regulated by the fact that we've provide our services for non-for-profit groups. Mm. All our drivers, because we've got a vast amount of drivers, need to be formally trained in some form, with what we call MIDAS, which is basically Minibus Driver Awareness Scheme. That type of course is something we provide for a cost and free of charge. And one of the reasons for our success in finding volunteer drivers is the fact that we work with a wide range of groups that need our minibuses to travel and take groups of people. But when we talk to these groups initially, when they first find out about us, we also ask them for to help identify drivers. And because of that, we find there's quite a large throughput of drivers that come through the system. So, for instance, at the moment, we've got a pilot project working at Llanelli on the Western Valleys with three electric vehicles. And the project worker at the moment is finding at least 40 drivers per month for us. So we're training up to 40 drivers per month now, up to the MIDA standard. Of those 40 drivers, 90% of them will only drive for the organisation that they've affiliated themselves to. So it might be the scouts, maybe the school or whatever that may be. But there's about 10%, maybe a little bit less depending on the area, that'll actually drive for anybody. And those are the people then we use for groups that may have not have a driver or individuals that need access to services.
How is that changing their existing kind of mobility situation?
Transport is something that we need in rural and urban settings, right? But the barrier to the delivery of some projects is transport. So when people put in for a grant, normally they're looking at transport, but they're looking at probably buying their own vehicle to transport people. And over the last 5-6 years, we've taken over asset from projects that have come to an end, but they weren't sustainable at the end of grant, if that makes sense. So we've taken over roughly around 6 vehicles because of that. And but what we've been able to do with the type of model that we deliver as a community hub is basically a more sustainable vehicle in that area. What we'd like to call, we call them community hub, hub plus. Hub is basically working in the community. Hub plus is basically taking people to other things that they may need to get further away from where they live. But we also like to think we leave a community legacy as well. So for instance, when we get grant funding in, we look at purchasing vehicles by capital, and that then ensures, as long as I do my work properly in creating the workload for that vehicle in the community, it just about guarantees that that vehicle will be there for the next 10 to 12 years.
Of the potential hours that each vehicle could be used, what sort of percentage of maximum capacity do you think you've got up to? Because you really focus on maximising that, don't you?
Yeah, definitely. It varies. We've got a mixed bag of usage for the vehicles. Our minibuses, for instance, the 16-seater, fully accessible, maybe out 3 times a day. And that would vary depending on the group and where they're actually heading towards and what the purpose was. I would say to you, probably at capacity, and we're talking about daylight hours from 7 till around 5 at night then. We'd probably have about, 75% use, and 25% where we could actually find other work for it. But the difficulties is, you know, if you volunteer and you take the vehicle out, right, you've got to bring the vehicle back and you've got to be there at that time for the next person to take the vehicle out. So we've got to have these overlaps.
Yeah.
I had a classic example many years ago where a mental health group, we're going to Cardigan to visit something in Cardigan. It ended up, they ended up in Tembe, right? Nobody knew this, bar for the GPS system when I went to look for it. But they were supposed to be back at 5 o'clock at night because there was another group taking it out at 6 o'clock, right? But they were still in Tembe at 5:30.
Is there any way that you'd be able to run a service like this one successfully if the drivers are all salaried, if they're paying a lot of volunteers?
No, it's your costs.
Yeah.
We don't have any employed drivers at all. All our drivers are fully volunteer, and basically we get that sense how we are able to keep our costs down to our communities.
Yeah.
And by investing heavily in electric vehicles, because that's brought our operating costs down by a third, which we pass on then to the people that use it.
Are e-bikes fitting into this kind of hub concept at all?
They are, of a sort. E-bikes, we really honestly thought that probably tourism is about the only thing that we'd be able to actually sell our e-bikes to or get the customer use from. But it's turned out, what we did, we were a bit more proactive than that. So we started loaning our vehicles out to different organisations that had a particular use for the bikes. They'd already said, we wouldn't mind trying that out to see how it works. And that's what we did, because basically we were able to then gather data around the loan of those vehicles, or bikes rather, and get to grips with the costings and the operating costs of those bikes. And that's been very successful for us. And we've got Ceredigion County Council now asking us for a bike for a refugee, a Ukrainian refugee. She's going to be using it to get to work.
Okay.
And we found now what the cost base is. Because the problem is, cost can be the barrier for lots of people in utilising your services. And bikes are no different.
We caught up with a family in Llandyssil Sylt to see how they're using the electric vehicle there.
Because we've been without a car for 11 months now, we can transport either there's 7-seaters that we use constantly, so we can give lifts to more boys then, and then it makes you feel better about asking for a lift then for more people, and also going out to the game, and it's just much better for the environment, more people can share lifts and so forth, and it's just normalising that. We run a local theatre group, so we could use the minibus to take people who couldn't walk up and down the hills here. So we could just do even short journeys. Running the food bank as well here in Llandyssil, we could go down to Morrison's and pick up all sorts of food and so forth to come. And we run Plantos, we collect and share kids' clothing locally, so we could go round and collect all sorts of stuff in one of the buses as well. So it's very much just a community feel. There is a structure, but being very aware of just your everyday life, things are not too controlled and strict, where I can take the dog in the vehicle, just make sure that I hoover up after. They're really, really just chilled, and you have to be like that in a rural area, really, where people, if the obstacles up to something, that changes your way of thinking about something, that's not as easy. It won't work.
It must be way more expensive travelling around all these places in rural areas as well, isn't it? Because you've got all the extra fuel costs, the fuel's gone up recently. Is this electric vehicle that you're able to use here as well?
Yeah, so that's 45 pence. Yeah, so it's 45 pence a mile. My husband's from Cardiff, and his parents and family live in Cardiff, and we go and support Welsh football a lot. So we're down in Cardiff City Stadium. And that's problematic because they're designed just for short journeys. It's only 145 miles, and it's not 145 miles, so you have to sometimes top up electric on the way down to Cardiff. That infrastructure is really lacking at the moment if you go further.
Well, we'd like to hear from the boys about what difference it makes to you having access to this car. Because basically, it sounds like you wouldn't have a car unless you had the service. Is that correct? Yeah.
Tishan Chirusa Dian.
I'm Haylin. I'm 11. And I live in Chandasil. And I use the Dolan TV van to go to school and rugby trainings and football trainings and so forth.
Mm. So, how important is it for you to go to rugby?
Very. Football training, not so much, but rugby, yeah.
So it's been good, has it, being able to access this vehicle, yeah?
Yeah.
It's more fun to go down to rugby games and trainings with more in the car.
Mm.
And then the on TV you can do that because there's about 7 seats in there.
Mm.
How long is the journey? Do you take it? You must take it for away games as well, right? So it's going to be
15 minutes if you go home. But then it depends where you're going. This Sunday we're going to Fishguard to play a game. So
yeah, a bit of time to have a bit of a laugh there, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't only recreational journeys that the family were using the vehicle for.
It takes 25 minutes to walk up to school. And this time of year, there's a lot of rain and stuff and wind. So, and it's up a hill, so we can just use the Dolan TV van just to get up in 2 minutes.
This family offer an example of how we can be thinking about community transport hubs in the future. It's not only older people or people who have complex mobility needs or community groups who can use these kind of hubs and vehicles. It's giving an opportunity for rural communities particularly, to kind of move away from this dependency that we have on private car use.
Do you see anything working like, it could be voluntary based, something that's a bit more like a local shuttle service or something where you can flag it down off the street?
Yeah, there's many types of services that communities can operate, right? Okay, and that could be dialer ride services on a Section 19 permit, or on a Section 22, you can actually do a hail and ride type service, which is very similar to a bus service. But the problem is, in running a 22 service, is the fact that you will be faced with a similar problem at the lower scaling costs of whether or not you've got enough passengers using your services, because you don't know they're going to be there at the bus stop that day. But we've been piloting in the Swansea area now, we're at Clydach with Swansea CVC, and we've got a group of people that basically negotiate their journeys Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. There are 13 people waiting to be transported, but they've all made that as a collective. So basically we are quite happy to actually provide that service, but we're assured there's going to be people there to actually utilise that service.
And to make that work, you need a community, don't you? You need people to know each other and to be speaking to each other.
But that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Really great, because basically, really great, you provide a service where people collectively come together. They may not know each other, but nevertheless, really great, once they've started that journey, really great, literally, pardon the pun, they are starting to talk to each other and they start to communicate with each other. They start to actually think about each other. And we've got examples of people really great, that come on buses and they say, well, that's strange. John hasn't come this week, really, for whatever reason, and really, they're concerned about John, and they then make contact with him to make sure that he's all right. So it's about reinventing society in some sort of way in communication. Whether it does or not, who can tell? But you know, we've got young carers groups that we've been carrying over the last few years, and the young carers was about basically really picking up young carers that have been identified to the system and taking them out of the family context and then take them to a youth club or whatever. And they used to transport them individually with the care support officers. But that was costly because they were coming from all sorts of different directions. And we set up a project and pilot with them, which basically allowed the youth workers, support workers, to be trained to drive the minibus. And then they would use a minibus then to collectively collect them all the way down the route back to the youth club. And what was noticeable as soon as they'd done that, none of these young carers were known to each other as they were being collected. But once the service got established, on the way down and on the way back, they were collectively talking to each other. Mm-hmm. So they were socialising a lot more, talking about different things that were more important to them and so on. And what it was doing was breaking down barriers, reinventing society.
I think that that cut has really made us more individual beings. Like, we just become used to just travelling by ourselves or within at least
exactly.
a family household. And we've lost connections around us.
We certainly have, and because we become more insular or
exactly.
isolated, you know,
yeah.
whatever that correct term is. But you know, we're not going to reinvent the wheel. The problem is we've got a very broken wheel at the moment, haven't we? And you know, and again, that's pardon the pun again, isn't it? Because you know, wheels, what are we talking about? But the reality of it is, there's plenty of opportunity from it as well. It's just about redesigning to be appropriate.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is, you know, if we don't redesign, we're going to have a much more isolated, much more isolated communities, individuals in our communities, some of age that just can't get anywhere.
Yeah. So we're in a care home at the moment, or what would you call
Independent living. Is it?
It's independent living.
Yeah.
It's called a sheltered accommodation.
That's right.
That is the term for it.
And it's perched on pretty much. Almost vertical cliff face.
Yes.
It's built in the wrong place.
But we've got the views.
You've got hills like this, you know. I can't even manage the
beautiful
hills,
sky at night.
Yeah.
I can't at all.
So, do you use this Dolent IV quite a bit to get down into the Lansdale town itself?
That's our only transport, yes.
Yeah.
That's all we've got. We've got no bus service as such.
No bus service around here whatsoever.
No.
Was there ever a bus service?
Yes, there was. Because
so we would go around kind of up and...
Oh, not really around the village, no. It was either from here to Cardigan or here to Newquay, which was nice because it was seaside.
Mm.
And you could get out for the day and come back. And from here to Carmarthen, which is the next... big town, should you need extra shopping or clothing or shoes or something.
Is that seaside bus still running, do you know?
No, it isn't.
How
no, we've got nothing.
There's no buses at all
now. A few years, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons I moved here, because I gave up driving because I couldn't drive anymore.
Yeah.
And,
Absolutely.
Yeah. But the book of bus doesn't work.
It
would, work if they came up here and picked us up.
But they won't.
But no.
So you have to
go down the hill and you walk. Yeah.
So that's the sticky bit, because if I could get from here down the hill to the bottom of the pavement, I could go anywhere I want but I cannot go down that steep hill.
The community transport users at Llandysil demonstrating the kind of challenges that they face in terms of their mobility, particularly with declining bus services, but also in terms of negotiating the kind of hills that are around in that area of Mid Wales. But I think one of the really positive things that's coming out of community transport at the moment is the way that it's bringing communities together. So not only in terms of the physical space of the vehicle itself, where people might be having conversations that they otherwise wouldn't have, but also in terms of strategically thinking about what kind of solutions might be suitable for their needs as a community. So discussing where they need to go and working together to volunteer, to put themselves forward, to take people's children to school, for example, or to the rugby, and having the flexibility to be able to hire a vehicle. So the community coming together where they're isn't necessarily another option, but also to move away from the dependency that they have on the private car use to create solutions that suit them in partnership with community transport organisations who are collaborating with the Welsh Government and with health boards to improve people's transportation with the community in the heart of everything they do. Thank you for listening to this podcast episode on co-production and community transport from Think. There are three more episodes in the series that you can explore on community transport. One is More Than Just a Journey, which is a soundscape of many people involved in and using community transport, describing what it is, how important it is, and how it contributes to our transport provision. There's also episodes on community transport and access to healthcare and digital futures in community transport. Do check them out. We hope you'll find out more about what we do by exploring our website for resources or signing up to receive news about our events and networking and collaboration opportunities. And you can follow us on Twitter at Transport Health. Finally, many thanks to everyone who has contributed to the interviews in the series. Goodbye for now.